Hello and welcome back to the podcast. You are listening to the Reversing Diabetes with Elaine MD podcast. This is episode number, I believe, 189. I meant to look that up. I'm pretty sure that's where we are. I'm your host, Dr. Delaine Vaughn. If you're looking for strategies to live a naturally healthy life, you are in the right place. That's what this podcast is dedicated to. So today we are going to talk about the struggle. It's definitely that season of the year where we have made New Year's resolutions and the reason that we don't stick to it has come to light, has kind of drifted up to the top because it's boring, because it takes making decisions that maybe in the moment are difficult in order to create something in the future that we want, all of these reasons. So this is kind of the time of the year where we're starting to consider dropping our New Year's resolutions, or we're starting to see it's harder to continue with the things that we want to create in our life. So that's what we're going to talk about. Before we get started, as I say, I started doing this maybe a year ago where I would mention this. So I think it's important, and I think it's so important that I say it in every single podcast. So if you are on meds for your type 2 diabetes and you are making the changes that I recommend in these podcast episodes and these episodes of this podcast, and you're making these changes and you're on meds, you need to understand that this can be dangerous. You need to have a clear line of communication with your primary care provider or the doctor who is prescribing these medications in order for you to have a way to call them, to contact them when your numbers start to get low, so you can get some direction about coming off of those medications. So if you are making these changes, please make a phone call to your physician or your primary care provider or your whoever's prescribing these meds so that you can be safe while you're doing this. If you're taking these meds and making these dietary changes, you can get to a point where you're sick, where it's dangerous, like deadly sick. Remember, you started medications because of the way you used to eat. When you change the way you eat, you're going to need different medications or less medications. That's the whole point of changing the way you eat, right? Like that's the point. That's what we're looking for. But there is a safe way to do it. And usually that takes some guidance from your primary or the prescribing physician. So please reach out to them, let them know. Please be careful if you are on medications and making these lifestyle modifications, these dietary changes. I also want to remind everybody to rate the podcast. If you are listening to this podcast and you're finding it helpful, you're finding the information helpful, you're getting amazing results with it, please rate the podcast and review the podcast. When you do that, the algorithm that the podcast apps use will put this podcast in front of more people. When it's put in front of more people can find the same help that you have just found and start implementing these changes to get the same results you're getting. Please rate, please review the podcast so others can see this. And lastly, follow me on Instagram, follow me on Facebook. There is a free Facebook group. I always get the name wrong. Maybe it's Reversing Diabetes with Delaine MD. Maybe it's Delaine MD Reversing Diabetes. I can't remember. Most of the time you Google Delaine. Thanks, Mom, for giving me a squirrely name. If you Google Delaine, D-E-L-A-N-E, you're going to find the group. It's a free group, but you have to ask for membership. So if you find that group, get on there. I think it's a robust, lively group of folks, and we have a lot of conversation in there that's good. So follow me on Facebook at Delaine MD, follow me on Instagram at Delaine MD, and then look for the Facebook group. Again, search Delaine MD, you'll find the group. So those are some ways that you can get help that's more than just what's going on in this podcast. So let's dive into the struggle. It is the time of year when we're really struggling to keep our New Year's resolutions, or we are struggling, you know, even if it's not. Like, I've had many women that I work with, and they all come to a point where they're just like, I don't want to do this anymore, or it's just so hard. Is it ever going to be easier? Why does it have to be this way? And so they get very frustrated, and they get exhausted. I mean, they describe it as exhausted. I'm exhausted with this. I'm just exhausted with the work of this. And when I ask them what they want, usually it's some version of, I don't want this to be forever, or I want to find peace with it. Right. So sometimes when they say, I don't want this to be forever, they do mean that they don't want to live without that food forever. But sometimes they just mean that they want it to just be easier for a moment. Like, they just don't want it to be this hard forever. And so when I ask them to describe what it is that's hard, they usually describe this, what I call a volley in their brain about, am I going to eat it? Am I not going to eat it? What am I going to eat? Do I eat that? Do I not eat it? Is it right? Is it wrong? Is it going to make my sugars pop up? Is it going to be fine? Am I going to starve? Am I going to be satisfied? Am I going to get so hungry that I overeat a bunch of stuff that makes me sick? Or am I going to be fine? There's this volley of discussion in their brain about, yes, I do. No, I don't. Yes, I do. No, I don't. Yes, I do. No, I don't. And yes, it is exhausting. It's that devil and that angel on your shoulder telling you stories that contradict each other. And then your attempt to decipher which one you want to do. And so when I ask them a lot of times, I'm like, "What? Why is this a problem that you're having this conversation?" One, they say they're exhausted with it. But two, they will report that there's a lack of trust. There's a lack of confidence in their ability to choose what serves their body best. And when I ask why there's that lack of trust in themselves, it's usually because they have thoughts floating through their head that sounds like, at some point, I'm just going to give in and I'm going to eat it. I know I shouldn't, but I'm going to. I know it should not even be a possibility, but here I am considering it. And then they start feeling hopeless because they are going to just do it. They have this story. They're just going to do it. And then, of course, they want to know how long they have to have this feeling, this negative feeling, this hopeless feeling. When I ask them why this volley is a problem, they tell me it's a problem because they don't trust that it's not going to devolve into this. I'm just going to eat it anyway. Okay. So when I coach clients through this, frequently I ask them, you know, why do you think that you're just going to eat it anyway? And they will tell me things like, because that's what I've always done. And they're looking at their past to create a different future, which is very hard to do. But in addition, they're just ruminating and reminiscing about the lack of trust they've built in the past. Okay. So it's interesting. What they want is peace regarding what they're eating, and what they create, what we create, and all the humans do this. This is nothing unique to my clients. This is nothing unique to you. This is nothing that was unique to me. I did this too. But what we create in this constant volley is chaos. This volley of conversation back and forth is a bunch of chaos. So when I ask them, you know, why is it on the table? Like, why is it still something that you're considering to eat these foods, even though they make you sick? Usually what they come up with is because I'm afraid that I'm never going to have it again. I am worried, like, why is it on a random Wednesday afternoon, why am I considering eating ice cream when I know it's going to shoot my blood sugars up? Their answer is usually some form of, well, I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to have the ice cream again, or it's been so long, and what if I can never have it again? Why do I have to keep doing this, right? And so my question, and this is probably one of the most insightful questions you can ask yourself. What's wrong if you can never have it again? Let's go there. What's a problem? If you can never have the ice cream again, what is wrong with it? Sometimes women will answer, well, nothing's really wrong with it. Yeah, well, if nothing was really wrong with it, we wouldn't be talking about it, right? Like, we wouldn't be having this conversation. What is it that your brain tells you is a problem with never being able to have ice cream or whatever your food of choice is? And usually what comes up is it's something along the lines of, I really want it. I really like it. Or it makes me feel good. The food makes me feel good. There's some version of why they want it that is keeping them compelled with considering having the food. Okay. So the next question I'll ask them is that true that you really want it? Like, that's 100% the truth. You really want the food. It's 100% the truth that you really like the food. It's 100% the truth that the food makes you feel good. And when I ask them that, is it 100% true? The story that you're telling yourself, is it 100% true? Almost always we come up with some version of no. Like, yes, I want it, but I wish I didn't. So it's not 100% true that you want the food. Yes, it tastes good, but that's not the only thing about it. Like, it tastes good, but it also makes me sick. So it's not 100% true that it's a good food, right? Like, that it's good just because it tastes good, right? The food will make me feel good. And invariably, my question is, how long do you feel good? How long do you feel good after you eat the thing? And they're like, it varies, 20 minutes, 2 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours. Usually it's somewhere between 20 minutes and 2 hours. And then I say, yeah. And how long do you, then what happens? And most of the time there's guilt. There's actual discomfort. There's nausea. There's the headiness that comes from the blood sugars going up, the like neurologic effects of the blood sugars going up, the neurologic effects of high insulin in our system. All of these happen and they usually don't feel good. And they last for quite some time, right? Again, whether it's the neurologic effect of the blood sugar or the insulin, or whether it's the disappointment in yourself for having eaten it, or whether it's the fear that you experience whenever you see a blood sugar in the 200s range for the first time in weeks because you broke down and ate ice cream. Okay. So the fact of the matter is, the truth of it all is that the food does not make you feel 100% good. It's not 100% that the food makes you feel good. There's a break, like it makes me feel good, but then. And so you can break it down like, yes, there is this really super intense feel-goodedness. And then there is this maybe moderate intensity feel-badness that happens, okay? Or there's a super intense feel-goodedness and there's a super intense feel-badness, right? But almost always the feel-badness, the part that is not pleasant, that's not 100% good, right? That part actually lasts for hours. And I would offer sometimes it lasts 4 days. There is a lot of not feel-goodedness that occurs because we had the food that we were telling ourselves that makes us feel good or that we like. Not only we don't like everything that comes with that food. We don't like the high blood sugars that come with our food, or we wouldn't be talking about that, right? Or it's my favorite. Whatever the story is, that's not the only bit that's going true. And you've heard me talk about this. I've talked about this on the podcast a number of times. It's called equal airplay. You can not only tell yourself one side of the story, you have to tell yourself both sides of the story, okay? But when we tell ourselves, like when our brain is in this panic mode of why can't I eat the food? I'm never going to be able to eat it again. Asking yourself what's wrong with not being able to eat it again gets you to the story below that you're believing is true and isn't. It tastes good. It's my favorite. I love it. It feels good. That's not the only truth. It is the reason that you will make the choice to eat the food that makes you sick, but it's based on a lie that you just told yourself. That 100% it's going to make you feel good. That is not the truth. We talked about this in the podcast earlier this year. I talked about delayed discounting, right? Like when you have the option for an instant gratification that is at the cost of a delayed gratification, frequently we will discount the delayed results. Like suddenly it's not as important. We discount the importance of the value of the delayed results for the instant gratification. Where almost always the instant gratification has far less objective value associated with it than the future delayed gratification will have with it. Meaning the instant gratification of the ice cream in the moment has far less value. You've had ice cream 1,000 times. In fact, you've had it so many times that your body is sick with type 2 diabetes. You know what ice cream tastes like. You know what it's like. It's good. But is it as good as a lifetime of health, a lifetime of wellness, a lifetime of your body functioning normally that you would achieve in the future at a delayed point, that delayed gratification? No, almost all of us would say no. The ice cream is not as valuable as long-term health, objectively. But we still make this decision in this moment, right? And we're making that decision, that instant gratification decision in the moment, because you're only believing one part of the story. And that's that the food makes me feel good. The food tastes good. It's my favorite. That's the only part you're believing. You're not believing the entire story. So asking yourself what's wrong with it, because that's going to get you to the bottom of it. Okay. The bottom, like what story you're believing that's making this seem like a good idea. Okay. And then asking yourself, why does it make sense that you want this food? I think this is a powerful question. This is the first of a series of three questions I work with my clients whenever they've done something that they wish they could go back and do differently. They've eaten something and they're like, I knew it was going to be a problem. I don't love that food. Like, it makes me sick. And I know that, but there I was eating it. And so why does it make sense that there you were eating it? Why does it make sense that your brain is offering you a food that will make you sick with type 2 diabetes? Why does that make sense? So things like, it's old habit. It's very comfortable. I'm used to believing it's only good. Like, that's, I'm used to believing that story. Because I've done this for years. I've done this for so many years, it's made me sick with type 2 diabetes. Why does it make sense that your brain is offering you ice cream or whatever treat it is? And then asking yourself, do I wish I could do it differently? If you've already done it, right? Like, if you've already eaten the food, do I wish I could have done that differently? Is a yes or no question. If yes is the answer, you move on to the third question in that series. If no is the answer, then you like your reasons and you stop kicking yourself in the ass for it. You just drop that part. That's not necessary. You've decided that you would do it again and you like the reasons for doing it, and that's fine. Okay. Now, if you say you'll do it again and you don't like the reasons, like, that's something we would coach on. Okay. But if you say you understand, why does it make sense? It makes sense to you why you did it. And then if you ask yourself, would you do it again? And the answer is no, I would like to do it differently. If you could do it differently, if you would, if you, that was option for you, yes, I would do it differently. Then you go to the question of how would you do it differently next time? Okay. And that how you would do it differently next time frequently comes back to the slowing it down when you're having this volley, this conversation, this chaotic volley in the moment, the devil and the angel on your shoulder. Should I do it? Should I not do it? Why is it on the table? It shouldn't be on the table. It shouldn't be part of my menu. I shouldn't even be considering this. This shouldn't. When your brain is going through that chaotic cycle back and forth, asking questions, you got to slow it down. Okay. You got to slow it down and see what your brain's telling you. What's wrong? Why is this a problem? Why is it a problem that my brain wants the food? For me, I'm like, it's never a problem that my brain wants the food. My brain, of course, my brain wants the food. Have you had it? Have you seen what it does to your brain? Of course, my brain wants the food. There's no problems here. I don't need to argue with my brain and talk it out of liking chocolate cake. That's like trying to fight gravity. So I don't need to do that. Of course, my brain's offering my food, the food, the ice cream, the chocolate cake, whatever it is. Of course, my brain's offering me that. It's just not time for me to eat it. I don't need to argue with my brain and talk myself out of it. Again, talking yourself out of it, that breaks down your trust. Looking back to what you've previously done, that breaks down your trust. Telling yourself the story, I'm just going to eat this because that's what I always do, that breaks down your trust. Why is it that your brain is offering you the food? That's helpful. It's offering me the food because it's afraid I'm never going to have it again. Okay, cool. What's wrong with that? If it makes me feel good, oh, that's really not true. It doesn't only make you feel good. It also makes you feel horrible for hours afterwards. That's also true. And when you can get to that bottom, you get some clarity on why you don't want to do it. And suddenly the chaos is dissolving, dissipating. And you get some idea about what you want to do. There's not this struggle. There's not this exhausting dance back and forth about what you're going to do, because you just told yourself the truth of the matter. It's not only good. It also makes me sick. It makes me sick with diabetes long-term, and it makes me feel badly for hours after eating it. I don't think I'm going to do that to myself anymore. That's the conversation that I have in my brain. I don't do that to myself anymore. I don't treat my body like that. I don't treat me like that. So understand, if you have this experience a lot, if this is the way that you find yourself coming to chocolate cake or ice cream or pizza or going on a food bender for a day and a half, if you find yourself coming to this a lot, I want to ask you if you experience anxiety associated with eating. When it is time to eat, or when your brain offers you food that will make you sick with type 2 diabetes, and you know it's food that really does not serve your health, do you start to experience anxiety associated with it? Nervousness, edginess. If you do, understand that that feeling will drive the production of stress hormones in your body, whether that be cortisol or adrenaline or the combination of these. Those hormones are meant to help you assess options quickly. Because again, your body and your brain does not know any difference between the stressor of a saber-toothed tiger trying to kill you or the stressor of having chocolate cake available to you when you should, like when it doesn't serve your health. Your brain doesn't know the difference between those stresses. Your body doesn't know the difference between those stresses. The way that our body behaves when we are under those sorts of stressors is the same, producing adrenaline and cortisol. When we were chased by things that would kill us, like saber-toothed tigers, it was important that we could have a way of rapidly evaluating our options to see how we could get to safety quickest. Okay. That rapid evaluation of options means that we are only looking at the step right ahead of us. We are not looking in the future to weigh the pros and the cons of that step. It's strictly, is this going to save me or not going to save me? That serves you well running from a saber tooth. That is not going to serve you well if you're trying to decide to eat chocolate cake or not. If you are only looking at the next step in front of you, the chocolate cake is going to absolutely seem like the right answer. You may die tomorrow. You don't even know. Eat the chocolate cake. That's where your brain will go. Chances are good you're not going to die tomorrow because you've lived all of these days, all of these years, all of this time and not having done that. So we're going to go ahead and bank. It's the same reason we pay our bills, right? Like we're going to go ahead and bank on I'm going to live tomorrow. That's coming from a calm, rational place, not from a place of anxiety, nervousness, or edginess, not from that stress place. So if you're experiencing anxiety when you're eating, you are going to make decisions that are only serving your immediate benefit, not long-term benefits. And I would highly recommend that you start to work on calming yourself prior to any eating. You need to work on calming yourself, whether that's 3 minutes of breathing, of deep breathing exercises, whether that's a meditation before you eat, whatever that looks like. But when you have food in front of you and you're feeling nervous and anxious and edgy, and the volley starts, the chaotic volley of conversation in your brain starts, and you start winding yourself up, I'm going to eat it. I know it's just going to happen. This is what I always do. I'm never going to be able to figure this out. Take a deep breath and calm yourself. Go to a calm state and do not make any decisions until you're in that calm state. When you're in that calm state, you can start to better analyze those pros and cons. Like what's the entire truth here? It's not just 100% good. For some amount of time, I'm going to feel really bad about this and my body is going to feel bad about this. And I'm going to prolong the result that I want, which is reversing my type 2 diabetes. Okay. So a number of things here, guys. Again, this is the time of year when we're all starting to falter on our New Year's resolutions, right? There's no longer the new sexiness of it. Now we're just having to kind of stick with it and figure out how do we do this every single day. Okay. It's easy to fall into complacency and fall back into old habits. So if you're feeling struggly, if you're feeling exhausted with the quote unquote struggle, take this time to work through this. Why is it a struggle? What is my brain telling me? And why is it a problem? Whatever my brain's telling me. Does it make sense that my brain's offering this to me? If so, do I want to keep doing this? If the answer is no, then how am I going to do it differently? And part of that doing it differently is slowing down this process and really looking at why your brain is telling you it is a problem. Okay. This is what we do in coaching. This is a great example of what happens in coaching. If that's something you're interested in, if you're interested in the 6-month program to help you reverse your type 2 diabetes, send me a message, Delaine@DelaineMD.com. We will get you set up for a consult and get you started. I hope you found this helpful. I will be back next week. Bye-bye.